Tonight, brothers and sisters, Brother Alec Fish is to be our speaker, and he is to talk on the Ecclesiastes of advice and warning to young and old in every age, and they are basically taken from Ecclesiastes 11 to Ecclesiastes chapter 12. And to introduce his subject, he has asked that we read Ecclesiastes chapter 12. So we now have much pleasure in asking Brother Alec to come and speak to us on the subject from Ecclesiastes, advice and warning to young and old in every age, basically taken from Ecclesiastes 11 to Ecclesiastes chapter 12. Brother Alec.
Well, good evening, dear brethren and sisters. Our task this evening is to bring to a close the study of this book of Ecclesiastes with particular reference to the author's instructions to young and old alike as we fulfil our daily tasks under the sun. And in this I am indebted to the work of Brother L.G. Sargent and his book Ecclesiastes and Other Studies. Solomon's chosen task was to bring to the attention of the serious reader that our time on earth, under the sun, is limited, and that we have duties and responsibilities to fulfil, which we will carry out depending on our degree of wisdom or folly, attitude and commitment. We have considered the conclusion that Solomon came to regarding our lives under the sun, that it is vanity or meaningless. These descriptions have troubled me because they give an impression that life for us is a complete waste of time, and that there is no possibility of obtaining a lasting satisfaction in any activity we might engage in. I looked for the synonyms for vanity, and the list includes pride, self-importance, self-admiration, self-absorption, self-centeredness, selfishness, conceit, arrogance, egotism, big-headedness, and then futility and emptiness. Oh, that selfishness, arrogance, conceit and the like are offensive personal characteristics that should be shunned and avoided by us all needs no emphasis. But futility and emptiness, they're not personal characteristics. They are conclusions we come to from the result of our own experiences. And there is a need for explanation if we are to profit from the experiences of the author of this book and ponder the reason for its presence in Scripture. The Apostle James acknowledges the situation and comments with the following words, James chapter 4, verse 13. Come now, you who say today or tomorrow we will go into such and such a town and spend a year there and trade and make a profit. Verse 14. Yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? For you are a mist, that is a vapour, that appears for a little time and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that. We have seen from our studies these last few weeks that the experiences which have prompted the writing of this book have come from someone at the end of a long life and are the conclusions of one who had everything that this life could offer. The young and the young in heart among us today may consider the remarks made in this book as somewhat austere, particularly since we live in a society that has, for the last 70 years or so, looked after us from the cradle to the grave. And the responsibility of caring for the sick and the elderly is much less arduous than it used to be. career opportunities are also much wider, varied, and possibly more fulfilling. However, we do have to remind ourselves that even in this country, children are reported as having to face the rigours and the privations of carer for parents or siblings. And elsewhere in the world, the young do face far more serious disadvantages. The recurring expression that runs throughout the book, and which defines the focus of attention, is of observations and experiences obtained under the sun. It is a reflection on what can be achieved only in this life. And the conclusion reached last week perhaps is summed up in Ecclesiastes chapter 9 and verse 10, one of our Sunday school proofs. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might, for there is no work or thought or knowledge or wisdom in Sheol to which you are going. But in other words, be enthusiastic about your daily tasks. Strive to gain honourable satisfaction from the labours here in this life, for nothing that we acquire now can follow us beyond the grave. What is also important for us to consider is that whatever choices we make in the way that we seek satisfaction in this life, there will be consequences and a price to be paid, as we shall see shortly. So let us now consider the wise man's concluding remarks as they relate to us, whether we be young or old. So we begin in chapter 11, verse 7 and 8. Light is sweet, and it is pleasant for the eyes to see the sun. So if a person lives many years, let him rejoice in them all. But let him remember that the days of darkness will be many. All that comes is vanity. Light is the essential energy that illuminates the world around us and was divinely ordained in the beginning in order that the organic matter might be created and be sustained. It is a phenomenon that we are all acquainted with, whether it is natural daylight from the sun in which we rejoice, or artificial light when the sun's rays cannot penetrate. Either way, it is essential for most forms of life. So light and life go hand in hand. Similarly, darkness, which is a total absence of light, equates with death, which is a total absence of life. We see from these two verses that, in spite of the overall conclusion that life is without meaning, a morbid preoccupation with death is not encouraged. On the contrary, while youth and youthful strength and looks prevail, there is an encouragement to rejoice and take advantage of the good things that life has to offer. And the next two verses put these thoughts into perspective. Verse 9. Rejoice, O young man, in thy youth, and let thy heart cheer thee in the days of thy youth, and walk in the ways of thine heart and in the sight of thine eyes. But know thou that for all these things God will bring thee into judgment. Therefore remove sorrow from thy heart, and put away evil from thy flesh, for childhood and youth are vanity. We remind ourselves here of the advice that the Apostle Paul gave to the ecclesia at Corinth regarding acceptable behaviour. 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 12. All things are lawful unto me, but all things are not expedient. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be brought under the power of any. Again, in discussing the excesses indulged in by some in time past, Paul repeats in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 23, "All things are lawful for me, but all things are not expedient. All things are lawful for me, but all things edify not." So Solomon reminds his readers that excesses inevitably generate consequences for which the indulgent will be held responsible. Yes, youth is a time for education, for adventure, for the seizing of opportunities and new experiences. But the wise man gives his approval for these only on condition that the desires are directed and controlled by a knowledge and an appreciation of whose we are and to whom we must give account at the judgment to come. Since we know that God will weigh our actions, it is our wisdom to be cognizant of his instructions and take them into account in the activities we engage in. Without these checks, the pursuit of human desires may all too easily bring sorrow or vexation by leading to evil. Therefore, the chapter finishes by counseling to remove sorrow from thy heart and put away evil from thy flesh, for childhood and youth are vanity. The recollection of a judgment to come should have a controlling influence and purge the excessive desires of a sensual waywardness. But more is needed than a merely negative restraint. Attack, we have been told, is the best form of defense. It is the positive desire to overcome. The best defense against evil is to fill the mind with positive good. So Solomon continues his advice in the last chapter with a positive plan of action. Verse 1 of Ecclesiastes 12. "Remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth, while the evil days come not, nor the years draw nigh when thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them." The series of figures that follow this instruction stimulates our imagination and builds up for us a picture of a household in which our consciousness is master. I'll repeat that, in which our consciousness is master. But the bodily members destined to continue to fulfill our ambitions and desires are the servants. And what better way to visualize the decline of the household than to compare the sunny days of prosperity, which reflect man's prime, when all about was bright and bustling, with the winter of decline and deterioration. With our current suburban lifestyle, we might easily fail to see the image, but previous generations would be familiar with a household and its complement of active men servants to guard it from thieves and other intruders. There would have been sturdy porters to bear the burdens when the household supplies had been delivered. It was frequently a woman's task to turn the upper millstone upon the nether to grind corn and wheat to make flour for bread. Lavish hospitality would ensure employment for these grinders. Doors were opened so that neighbours might join in and help, and the house reverberate with the sound of chatter. Upstairs, the ladies would spend time at the windows watching bright-eyed at the comings and goings of the world outside. Yes, the advice comes again in verse 2, to remember now thy Creator while the mind is active and responsive to his call. Verse 2, while the sun or the light or the moon or the stars be not darkened, nor the clouds return after the rain. Sun and light, moon and stars are expressions of life and opportunity. of romance and enthusiasm, while darkness speaks of weakness and weariness. Sunshine that follows a shower of rain brightens the mind. This is the time to remember our responsibilities to our Creator, to learn of Him, and to follow His decrees. Clouds that continue after rain are a promise of a further burden. Time and the seasons progress. The fortunes and age of the master of the household show signs of strain and decline. And with masterful imagery, Solomon weaves more threads into this tapestry, and the final picture of woe emerges. And the doors shall be shut in the streets. No longer do we hear the bustling chatter of voices preparing for guests, for the doors are closed, as though the house is in mourning. When the sound of the grinding is low, and he shall rise up at the voice of the bird. His sleep is not sound as it used to be. He slumbers rather than sleeps, and the crowing of the cockerel wakes him, and with so much difficulty in breathing while in bed, he is glad of the dawn to rise up and get some relief. Even the chirping of the sparrow is sufficient to waken him. And all the daughters of music shall be brought low. The voice, that wonderful instrument with which we give praise, almost endless in the strength and variety of its tones and timbre, becomes feeble and squeaking, and merriment and pleasure are no more, or possibly the ears that once heard clearly have become muffled, so that communication is difficult. Also, when they shall be afraid of that which is high, and fears shall be in the way. High footpaths, ladders, even stairs once traversed with confidence become serious obstacles when confidence in one's balance fails, and the fear of falling and not being able to rise again becomes real. The almond tree shall flourish. The Hebrew for flourish here is really to scorn, to abhor, to despise. The idea then is not to thrive or grow luxuriously, but to weaken due to lack of nutrient. The almond tree having white flowers is a fit emblem of a hoary head, or as an observer once remarked, the Judean almond tree is in full flower, looks like an old man with his white locks. And the grasshopper shall be a burden. Well, I struggled with this one. It seems a curious caricature for which I could find no really satisfactory explanation. Their use in scripture is either to compare by size, as when the 10 spies reported to Moses that they seemed as grasshoppers in comparison with the indigenous people, or they exist as a multitude, as in the days of Gideon when the Midianites invaded. And desire shall fail, because man goeth to his long home, and the mourners go about the streets. At this point, the household master is so near to death that the professional mourners are already gathering in the street outside, waiting for the summons to ply their noisy trade. Or ever the silver cord be loosed, or the golden bowl be broken, or the pitcher be broken at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the cistern. Here the symbol of light returns, together with the figure of water, to bring this allegory of life to a close. In the house, as a relic of former grandeur, hangs a lamp in the form of a golden bowl, suspended by a silver chain. One of the few things untarnished by age or decay, it has been there through all the years, faithfully providing its guiding light. Solomon had written in his book of Proverbs 13, verse 9. It was a sign of extinction to the wicked that their lamp should be put out. A lamp of gold, beautifully wrought, therefore fittingly symbolizes the preciousness of the animating power at man's disposal. But the day comes when the chain snaps and the bowl crashes to the floor, spilling its oil, and the light is extinguished. The thread of life is broken and the container of life destroyed. Likewise, the pitcher used to lift water from the well of life is shattered, and the wheel that once carried the rope at the head of the well has disintegrated and is now at the bottom. Then shall the dust return to the earth as it was, and the spirit shall return unto God who gave it. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher, all is vanity. Thus, in a graphic and poetic manner, Solomon brings to a close his picture of the destiny of mankind, and were it not for the promise of God made with the fathers, there would be no hope for anything better, and we would be left with the conclusion already made that life is futile and meaningless. However, Solomon did not accept this as a finality, but continued. Verse 9. And moreover, because the preacher was wise, he still taught the people knowledge. Yea, he gave good heed, and sought out and set in order many proverbs. The preacher sought to find out acceptable words, and that which was written was upright, even words of truth. The words of the wise are as goads, and as nails fastened by the masters of assemblies, which are given from one shepherd. And further, by these, my son, be admonished. Of making many books, there is no end, and much studiness is a weariness of the flesh. The reality of Solomon's words in these chapters have been hidden from us in this Western society to a large part by the effects of the welfare state during the last 70 or 80 years, and we in this country only see glimpses of it in museums and the writings of the likes of Charles Dickens and others, whose consciences drove them to fight for the social reforms we currently experience and for which we are grateful. But in the mercy of God, there is something far greater in store for those of us who seek for the life that is to come. For us to follow the exhortation to remember our Creator while there is opportunity and while there is the capacity to learn what is required of us. Solomon has done far more than describing poetically what we all know, that human life and youthful vigour and enthusiasm silently passes its prime and travels inevitably to the grave. In this he draws attention to the inevitable deprivation of light where the source of the light is disregarded. For here the picture of physical decrepitude has its overtone a spiritual loss. This is the end of man without God. The antidote to this portrayal of aging feebleness and the play upon the symbol of light conveys the lesson that youth is the time for thankful dedication to the Creator. For what is life but a gift? And what is life for but to remember with gratitude the giver? Without that, it is truly nothing but a breath. Verse 13 and 14. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil. Thank you.